Nick Faribault from Steelers Now here on 93.7 The Fan. Nick, two big visits today for the Steelers, one of them being Jaxon Powers-Johnson. Blake Fisher, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame, also in town. Which one of those guys more likely a Pittsburgh Steeler?
I don't know which one's more likely. Probably JPJ, Jaxon Powers-Johnson, just because, you know, first-round tackles interest is very real to me, and I still think that's the likely spot they go in round one. And Jaxon Powers-Johnson, listen, the conversation around him has evolved from, in my opinion, 1 of 20 to maybe 1 as a trade back, trade up from 51. You know, this is a guy that's probably going to fall to the first round now. Medical questions are there. Dealt with hip and groin issues this season, has had multiple concussions throughout his career. So those medical questions are going to be big. And he's just a guy that I feel like throughout the process, it seems like the media, us have been a little higher than the league has. That's kind of just catching up to the league, but that's what I keep hearing. Mel Kiper's saying that. And so, you know, second round, Jaxon Powers-Johnson is like a home run pick. I mean, we're talking about a guy that can really play at a high level football here. He's a perfect schematic fit. Blake Fisher is a nice player too. You know, if they don't get a tackle early, could be a perfect fit there for the third round. I think he's actually a lot better than some of the other guys that are going to go in front of him in that second round. He'll probably go in the third, and I think he can plug and play right tackle, be a starter, be a real steady pass pro guy, athletic player. So he's a good player too, but I think Jaxon Powers-Johnson is probably the likelier one, just because I think one of him or Zach Frazier are going to be Pittsburgh Steelers.
So could you see if he gets out of that first round, JPJ, that is, could you envision the Steelers wheeling and dealing a little bit, Omar Khan playing around with some of those third round picks, trying to move up in the second round a little bit higher and getting Powers-Johnson then?
Oh, no question about it. I can 100% see it. And the reason is, look at what they did last year, where moved up for Broderick Jones, traded back from 80, still got Darnell Washington at 93. They like to maximize value, and they kind of wheel and deal as they see fit. And Jaxon Powers-Johnson, man, is a really kind of special skill set at the center position. You just don't find guys that big with that length that have that type of movement skills. I mean, he changes the ability to run the football just by being in there. He's a special talent there. He's a first-round talent. He's just probably not going to go in the first round. It really seems like that's where it's going to go. Sounds like Graham Barton's going before him. If the Steelers are on the clock at 51 and he goes, you know, I think Kiper had him going 47th overall. I don't think he lasts that long. But if he even goes 10 picks before them and they don't at least call and try and get up to get him, I think they're doing themselves a disservice, because again, you draft him, he changes what you can do as an offense. He really is. He is a guy that can change your run offense.
Do teams have concerns with him just snapping the football? Like I love what I see from the guy for the most part, but even I've noticed that there are some tendencies there where the snaps aren't always right at the quarterback's chest. And I know that Creed Humphrey has had that issue in Kansas City, and I would still consider him, when we're beyond that part of the play, he's one of the best centers in the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue. It was a terrible issue down at the Senior Bowl, Donnie, where he was just all over the place with his snaps. And really, when you look at his snaps on tape, it's the same way. Often off to the right, Nick's kind of adjusted to it over the year, but with a new quarterback, not everybody's going to be used to it. So that needs to be fixed. I think he is a little raw in pass pro still too. He's a very young player, and he only has really one true year of experience at center, so he's still kind of learning the landscape of it all. But he is a very special talent. But snapping the football, that is a little bit of an adventure at times, just as you mentioned with Creed Humphrey. It seems like to me, Donnie, and I'm not sure if it's, you know, actually backed up by data. I haven't looked into it, but a lot of these guys I evaluate coming out of college, and even sometimes when you look around the NFL, you know, like Mason Cole had this issue, Pouncey at the end of his career had this issue. It just feels like snapping the ball is actually becoming a lot harder, or at least more of an issue with a lot of guys around the league. It really kind of is almost something that a lot of these centers have a trouble with. I remember looking at a lot of the free agent lists where okay, Steelers could sign this guy, and consistently coming up would be snapping accuracy issues. So I'm not sure what's going on there, if they're prioritizing hand quickness, getting that offhand up, and getting the on-hand on quick, or what's going on. But, yeah, Jackson Powers-Johnson definitely falls into that category.
Do you think that Graham Barton is a better option? Mel Kiper has the Steelers taking him at 20 in his latest mock draft, and as you said earlier, it seems like the consensus is starting to be coming that he will be that first center that goes, even though he hasn't played that position in a few years.
You know, I love Graham Barton, and I think he probably is the most polished technical-wise of all the centers. I think he's a guy that has great feet and hands. He plays with an edge. He's the type of athlete, too, where, again, can really transform your run game. So, yeah, I think I prefer him over Powers-Johnson, mainly because I think the projectability, even when you're talking about a guy going from tackle to center and hasn't played in 3 years, is there just because he looks like a true five-spot versatile guy. We've seen it on tape where he has played across different positions. He looks natural wherever he goes. His technique lends itself to that. So, you know, this isn't like a Kendrick Green where he's a guy that should have been playing at guard the whole time, or a Kevin Dotson where he should have been playing at one side the whole time. You know, this is one of those rare guys that can really move up and down the line. And so to me, he is better than Jackson Powers-Johnson in the fact that he is technically ready. I think Powers-Johnson has more upside long term. So I think it's really where you're going with that. But I think Barton's going to slot in at center right away and play at a really high level, or whichever team maybe gets him, maybe he goes to guard. But I think he can play center at a very high level, and I don't really have many concerns about his projectability there. I think Graham Barton, personally for me, if you're talking day one ready, that's who I think is the top guy. And that's why you're kind of seeing him go in the back end of round one, because if you're a team there that needs a center upgrade, you're going to want a guy that can play day one.
Someone else that is looking like a potential second-round option, that is Zach Frazier, the center from West Virginia. How do you feel about him?
Yeah, a little different than Powers-Johnson and Barton. Not the athlete those two are. Very smart. I think he's the most, I guess, projectable guy just on tape, intangibles, measurements of just, okay, what am I getting? Like, I know what I'm going to get in Zach Frazier. That's a rugged type of player that plays with an edge and is extremely smart. He's going to be a captain at this level. He is a plug-and-play guy that'll play day one. I just don't think there's a ton of, like, future upside. I think he is what he is. He's very polished. He's ready to go. Not quite the athlete, so it kind of lowers the ceiling a little bit. But he's a really good player. Is he a first-round player? No. But if he's sitting there at 51, I think that's a great pick. I think that's beautiful value for the Steelers. And he slots in right away. I think, you know, pass pro, it's a little more of an adventure than a guy like Powers-Johnson or Barton, just because he doesn't have the length that those two have. And Frazier as well also struggles a little bit versus power, but he's very strong, plays with good leverage. The Texas tape was a little rough, and he went up against Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. Both those guys were pretty highly sought after in this draft. So that's a little concerning tape, but then you look at the rest of the season and it doesn't pop up even against, you know, future NFL players or guys that are going to be playing in the NFL this upcoming season as rookies. So I think it's a little bit more of an adventure in pass pro. And again, the ceiling isn't as high because he's not the athlete space that those two are, but he's still a very solid player and he will slot in as a starting center probably for a decade.
Steelers writer Nick Faribault from Steelers Now with us on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Following up on the Kiper mock draft that was just put out, Jalen McMillan from Washington, the wide receiver, his pick for the Steelers at 51. How would you feel about one of those wide receivers being an option in the second round?
I think that second round wide receiver group is really good. I think that's where the meat of that group is. I think when you get to 84, there can be guys that will start, but you might get a guy that's a little raw and isn't going to slot in there right away, right? If you're at 51, you know, McMillan's one of them, but his teammates, Jalen Polk, Ricky Pearsall, Xavier Leggett, You're seeing maybe a guy like Troy Franklin, Keon Coleman maybe fall there. I don't think that probably happens, but it's possible. But there's, you know, Roman Wilson's in that group. There's a nice group of players there, a lot of different types of players. McMillan's a fun player. He's a really tough guy, probably a slot that can play outside, but he's more of an inside guy first. But I think can play outside. Really tough, strong hands, solid route runner, savvy, just a silky smooth player. Makes it look easy. He is a really good player. You know, I know those Washington guys are probably going to go later than they should, just because obviously Roma Dunze was the alpha dog of that three receiver room. But McMillan's 22 tape is great. The 23 tape is great. Polk's tape is great too. Really, however you order them, those three guys are all going to be really good NFL players. So I think if you get Polk or McMillan at 51, I think that's a good pick. You know, I look at Leggett, different type of player. Pearsall, different type of player. But those are all good players. Like, I like that group at 51 more than I like that group at 84. And, you know, those guys at 84, you know, we're probably talking about Malachi Corley in that room, but he's a little bit more of a raw player. So, what do you want, plug and play or a guy that's maybe a little raw? I think what the Steelers need right now, Donnie, is a plug and play guy that can at least give you production from day one.
Speaking of that 84th pick, that are really both of those third round options that we can get into here. I know that you like a group of the corners that will be guys that go around that time. Getting to some of those names and what the options could be on the table for the Steelers in that third round at corner.
Yeah, a lot of good slot corners in that group. You know, Mike Sanner still not sure exactly where he's going to go. Probably a little earlier than that. But even when you get down to this, you know, you're talking about Andrew Phillips in there from Kentucky. Really, really solid run defender. A guy that plays with a chip on his shoulder. Fits with the Steelers' love in the old slot corners. Like he's like a Kevin Colbert type of slot corner. You know, he fits like that Art Mollett, Mike Hilton-ish type of mold. If they really want a blitz rundown slot, they want more of a coverage, silky smooth guy that's a little longer, could even press up. You got Renardo Green out of Florida State. That's a guy that I really like for them. He is a really good player, and I think being very underrated in this process could easily be one of the top five best corners from this class. He's a really good player. Has played outside, inside, and at safety. So I love that chess piece element to him. I really like Max Melton out of Rutgers. That's a guy that is super athletic, great cover corner, and he can play inside and outside, which I like. And, you know, a guy like Phillips, a guy like Sandra Still, probably are more slot specific. Melton can play both, and he's more of a pure cover guy. So that's more of where the NFL is heading, those pure cover guys. His run defense is also, he kind of stacks up there. I don't think he's elite there, but he tries. He's a really solid player, you know, and even Boston College Elijah Jones. I like him too. Obviously, you know, the Boston College thing is going to be brought up just because Dino Tomlin played there. I get it, but this is a guy that's really good. Plays with a ton of speed, very fast. Recognition is great. Ball skills are there. He's a really underrated player. Can play inside or outside. Probably projects more as a slot. So there's just a lot of slot corners, and that's not even, you know, going even to the fourth round where you have guys like Jarvis Brownlee that can fit in there. So there's a lot of guys in this slot corner class. I don't think it's a great outside corner class, but the slot corners are all there.
Nick, ideal positions that you want to see addressed in rounds 1 through 3. I mean, yeah, they have the two picks in the third round, so we can include that one as well. In what order do you want to see these positions addressed, and you can even give some names too at each spot that people should have their eyes on?
Yeah, I think the four positions ideally that I would like to see addressed are tackle, center, receiver, and probably corner. The defensive line can go in there too. It depends on the value of that. That defensive line pick is very value-based for me. I could see it fitting in. But I think tackle in round one makes sense, just that group of tackles that is going to be there between Fuaga, Latham, Mims, and Fatanu is a really strong group. That feels like the BPA kind of there. And then I feel like you can get corners later. I think the receiver group is deep enough. So those are kind of those names with tackle. If you're going to state receiver, you know, Thomas or Mitchell makes sense. A.D. Mitchell is a really talented player. If you're going to trade back, and I think they should trade back in round one, Donnie, I'm falling in love with that scenario because they need an extra day two pick because, as I'm saying, right, that defensive line pick, they probably could use another one. And it really gives them flexibility to go BPA on the board. So that's kind of what I would do. If you trade back, I think a guy like A.D. Mitchell makes a lot of sense. If you're going to the second round, you know, I think that's where you look at center, Zach Frazier, Jackson Powers Johnson. If it's receiver, I think the best fits for them are a guy like Polk, McMillan, or Pearsall. That's where I would go with the pick in the second round. If it's receiver, that's kind of where I see it probably duking out. It's either that or Frazier or JPJ. If you're going to go receiver in round three, I think you're talking, you know, Malachi Corley, Javon Baker from UCF, someone like that in that range. Devontae Walker is in that range probably too, but I like a guy like Corley a little more than that. So I would probably go there if you're going to go receiver. If you're going to look at tackle there and you maybe don't get one, that's where, you know, Blake Fisher at 98, you probably start getting into Mack and Salvez, Javon Foster. So those are a few names there. And then I think you go corner. And corner, you know, the guys I mentioned, Phillips, Green, Melton, in that kind of group. That's where I would like to see it, those four positions. And then defensive line, I think, is the wild card. Where does that fit in?
Okay, so your top four, you go offensive tackle, center, receiver, corner, and then you mention that defensive line could find its way in there as well. Speaking of receiver, Nick, your boss, Alan Saunders, put out there a proposition of the Steelers maybe making a move for Doug Baldwin, who played for years in Seattle with Russell Wilson. What are some of the things that you've heard on that, and what are your thoughts on that possibility?
Yeah, Tyler Lockett.
Tyler Lockett. I didn't have it pulled up. What, Doug Baldwin.
Doug Baldwin forever, man.
Still Tyler a hell of a player.
Dude, Doug Baldwin was one of the most underrated receivers to play when he was out there, so I respect it. Tyler Lockett is like Doug Baldwin's son, basically. So it fits.
Yeah, very similar players.
Very similar players. And Russ liked both of them, trust me. You know, Tyler Lockett is like the Deontay Johnson replacement of Deontay Johnson replacements because he's an expert route runner, little undersized, doesn't do too much with the yak. He kind of just, you know, catches it, goes down, minimizes his injury risk, which has its good and its bad. He's a good player. Now, I will say this. That's going to have to be a post-June 1st thing because the cap hit is insanely astronomical for Seattle. I don't know if they want to move him. If you restructure a contract to make it post-June 1st, I mean, let's be real here, Donnie. That's setting it up for him to not be traded. It just is. I know that they want to get more to Jackson Smith and Jigba, and DK Metcalf is there, but I think if they offer the right package for Lockett, it could happen. Now, I know he had a press conference today, and he ended it by saying he didn't want to see any articles written about him being traded, and that was about 40 minutes after that piece was published, which was some pretty incredible timing. So I think it probably is signaling Tyler Lockett's not an option. I will throw one name out there that I feel like is an option, though, and he's also played with Russell Wilson, and it's Courtland Sutton from the Broncos. I just feel like that is more realistic target because, one, I think the Broncos have the flexibility to do it. For one, they've been trying to trade Courtland Sutton, it feels like, forever. Like, he's a receiver that, like, lives on the trade block. He's similar to Mike Williams, contested catch guy. They were trying to get Mike Williams, obviously, in free agency. And he's a guy that has built-in connection with Russell Wilson and won't cost a ton. Like, I don't know, they might have to get, like, a fourth-round pick. It's not going to be a ton of draft capital you're going to have to give up. The cap isn't insurmountable for Denver. I think it's like $9 million dead cap, but they get like $7 million in savings. If they do it post June 1st, I think they get $13 million savings and like $2 million in dead. So that is a very big possibility to me. I think Courtland Sutton's more likely than Tyler Lockett.
Do you think the Brandon Ayuk thing has any juice left at all?
Not for now. Now, I know that is the popular thing, but the timeline for a Brandon Ayuk trade is and always was going to be an OTAs training camp thing. It's all because that's when the contract negotiations are really going to start to heat up, because Ayuk probably isn't going to show up to OTAs, and he might hold out for training camp. If that really starts to heat up, things sour, I think that's when those trade talks get really, really heated up, because right now, like, the Niners are getting calls, and obviously, you know, the Steelers are one of the teams that are going to call about them just to see, like, okay, what's going on there. But they're not actively going to trade him yet, because those negotiations aren't deep enough. Like, it's not like the Bengals T. Higgins situation where they've been talking enough already and they know they're very far apart. So maybe there's something that can be worked out between those two sides. But if we start to get into training camp and Ayuk's not showing up, I think that's when we really start to see the wheels turn on an Ayuk trade. So is there juice left? Yes. Is there juice left in, you know, the next month or two? No. But I think we get to training camp, those negotiations go south, it's pretty clear he's not going to come back. I think that's when you start really heating up the trade, and I would expect the Steelers to be in on that.
The draft 2 weeks from tomorrow, that is when the first round will begin in the 2024 NFL draft. Now, last year, so far it looks like that Omar Khan in his rookie draft as Steelers GM, that looks like it has gone very well. This time around, we got to kind of hope for the same thing, because I get the feeling that we have seen a lot of holes open up on this Steelers roster. Would you agree with that, or do you think they're actually in an okay spot right now?
I mean, there's no doubt that the holes have opened up. They opened up a hole receiver by trading Deontay Johnson. They cut Mason Cole and Patrick Peterson. Okay, they exacerbated those problems. But also, like, my counterpoint to most of those, outside of Deontay Johnson, because he's a good player, is Mason Cole and Patrick Peterson weren't the solution at corner or center anyways. Like, those were guys you wanted to go over anyways and weren't playing well last year. So is it, like, exacerbating a hole? Yes. But it's, like, it's making a slightly, you know, bigger pothole just a little bit bigger. Like, it's not really that big of an issue to me. So, yes, they have holes. But this isn't a team anyways, Donnie. I understand they signed 35-year-old Russell Wilson, so you should expect him to win playoff games. But, like, just look at the roster and be in reality. Like, it is not a Super Bowl-built roster. It's just not. And so I think the Steelers even have to realize that. And, you know, with the young guys they have, 2025 should be the year where this thing's kicking in high. That's where it really should be. So is it like a huge issue? I don't think so. Now, they have to hit on these. You know, they have to hit on center. They have to hit on wide receiver if they want to get to that urgency they talked about, win a playoff game for the first time in a while. But I also think that you kind of have to look at it through a lens of Mason Cole and Patrick Peterson weren't going to be solutions. And with Deontay Johnson, like, that was a guy that really probably wasn't going to be back after this year, one. And two, probably wanted, they both wanted a fresh start. And it kind of just felt like a natural separation. So put themselves in a tough spot for this year. But also, I think the future view is, man, those guys weren't going to be solutions anyways.
Nick Faribault, Steelers writer from Steelers Now. Nick, thanks for taking the time, buddy.
Yeah, as always, thanks for having me on, Donnie.
There we go. Nick Faribault, one of the best young Steelers reporters out there.